Okay, I'll call this meeting the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 1:35 PM on Thursday, February 17th, 2022. Present today, we've got Representative Thompson, Representative Carpenter, I believe, is online. Representative Carpenter, are you there? No, okay. Representative LeBon is here, Representative Edgman, Representative Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Merrick, Representative Josephson, Representative Wool, are you online? No, okay. And Representative Johns, oops, I'm sorry, she's not here, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. And just a reminder, folks could mute their cell phones. And today, we'll have a presentation from the Department of Public Safety on the department's budget. And here to present are Commissioner James Cockrell, Deputy Commissioner Leon Morgan, and Special Assistant Kelly Howell. And so if we could have Commissioner Cockrell, Deputy Commissioner Morgan, and Ms. Howell up here, and thanks for joining us. If you could put yourselves on the record, and then as we move through the presentation, if we're kind of going back and forth, just for folks who are recording the minutes and having to type the minutes later, if you could just identify yourself. But with that, thanks for being here, and if you can put yourself on the record.
For the record.
For the record.
Co-Chair Foster, this is Leon Morgan, Deputy Commissioner of Alaska Department of Public Safety.
And good afternoon, Co-Chair Merrick, Co-Chair Foster, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kelly Howell, and I'm the Special Assistant to the Commissioner for the Department of Public Safety.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. I'm James Cockrell. I am the Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Public Safety. It's certainly a privilege to be here. And through the Chair's indulgence, I'd like to have a short, make a short statement about our budget.
Sure, and I'll just note that we've also got Representative, you said somebody, let's see. Oh, Representative Wool, are you online?
I am, thank you, Chair Foster.
Okay, thank you, and we've got introductory comments.
Okay, first of all, if it's okay, I'd like to introduce my staff behind me, because they do an excellent job for the state of Alaska. I got Fire Chief Marshal Richard Buze, our aircraft manager, our operations manager, Clifford Gillen, and our CDVSA expert, Diane Costco. And I've got several lifelines from our directors in Anchorage. And I'd like to say on the record that I think I've got the finest leadership staff that the department's ever had. I'm pretty fortunate to have the quality of individuals that I have guiding our department. I know that we're in good hands. What I'd like to do is open up kind of where we're at with the department, with our budget. And I guess my vision of where we're at as a state and law enforcement. Since I've been commissioner, which has been just under 1 year, it was about a year ago that the previous commissioner left the department, I've been able to travel, or we have been able to travel around the state to talk to many of our citizens, most of them in rural Alaska. And I want to tell you, and I want to tell people in rural Alaska, we are listening to their concerns. And I think we address some of those concerns in our budget, and we'll continue to work towards providing more resources for rural Alaska. But one of the overall theme that I've heard, whether it's in Cake, Tok, Tyonek, Bethel, we just had a meeting yesterday with Saliska Corporation there in the Waikiki Delta. One thing that resonates to me is, first of all, our citizens understand that we have a crime problem in Alaska, even though crime has been reduced in some areas of the state. We still leave the country in per capita in domestic violence and sexual assault. The YK Delta leads the state in domestic violence and sexual assaults. We have more domestic or sexual assaults in the Bethel region than we do in the city of Anchorage. In the city of Anchorage, most of, if you look at per victims, they're Alaska Natives. If you're a female in this state, you have a higher chance of being murdered than any by your domestic partner than any other state in this country. So with that said, we're focusing on our statutory requirements, our priorities as a department, which you'll see in our slides, the governor's priorities, the focus on rural Alaska, and revitalizing our VPSO program. I've had a lot of discussions here in Juneau with many legislators about our VPSO program. And again, that's something that this department is committed to. We're committed to ensuring that we grow that program, just like we were committed to growing the number of state troopers that we have on the road protecting our citizens. I have no doubt if we get everything that we've asked for this budget, we will provide more safety to our citizens in Alaska, and we will definitely save people's lives. When I started the department almost 40 years ago, believe it or not, it shows my age, 1983, Alaska State Troopers had 308 authorized physicians. Currently, almost 40 years later, we have 315. And in 40 years, think of what's happened to this state, the growth of the state, the complexity of the crimes that we have. Since statehood, we have never provided, we've been disproportionately putting our resources in other areas of the state instead of addressing our rural areas. And what's going to happen if we continue this trend? Somebody's going to have to fill that void, and it's going to be the federal government. The state has an obligation, regardless of what zip code you live in, that we provide adequate professional law enforcement responses. And again, as a department, we're committed to that. We have a long ways to go, and we're going to continue to ask for more resources, because providing professional law enforcement resources in this state is not cheap. So with that said, unless you have any questions, we'll open up with, I appreciate the ability to make that statement, and we'll open up with Kelly Hall.
Great, thank you for those introductory comments. I'd like to note that Representative Rasmussen joined us earlier, and we've got a question from Representative Thompson.
Thank you. Commissioner, thank you for being here. I was just curious, as to start the conversation, is how are they doing on housing in rural areas for troopers?
To the chair, Representative Thompson, that is one of our, and we've talked about it in our subcommittees, and I will say we've had some really great discussions in our subcommittee on our overall direction of the department. That's one of the areas that we are struggling with. We continue to look at all avenues to provide more housing in our areas. We'd certainly like to put troopers in more of our rural areas like Stebbins and St. Michael's and Ambler. The bottom line is first of all, we don't have housing, and we have to have positions to put them there.
Great. Thank you. So with that, we'll jump right into the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Again, for the record, this is Kelly Howell. This slide just depicts what our mission is to ensure public safety and enforce fish and wildlife laws. But the key objectives are something that when Commissioner Cockrell took his position, he wanted to set a direction and a course for the department. And setting these key objectives was something that he did pretty early on after taking office and or his position. And so he sent this out to every single member of our department. I have handouts here that I can share, but essentially the key objectives to help the department know the direction that this commissioner wants to take this department in are to recruit and retain. So we want to fill all of our open positions, both commissioned and civilian, in our department with qualified employees, and ensure that we're retaining employees through superior support, excellent working conditions, and exceptional compensation and benefits. With respect to rural Alaska law enforcement and safety, I think you'll see as we go through the slides that this budget is focused on rural public safety. But as the commissioner said, we want to prioritize resources, personnel, and support to provide quality, full-service law enforcement to rural Alaska. We want to increase village patrols and the number of troopers deployed to rural Alaska, and prioritize our fire safety inspections and education in rural Alaska to prevent fire-related deaths. With respect to domestic violence and sexual assault, the department works with our partner law enforcement and nonprofit agencies to increase awareness of the plague of domestic violence and sexual assault in Alaska, and ensure that every instance that's reported to the Department of Public Safety is thoroughly investigated and referred for prosecution. One of the things that I think most folks have heard as we've made visits to offices and other presentations in the Capitol is the emphasis on the Village Public Safety Officer Program. So the commissioner said that he wants to revitalize the program, and that is a genuine and honest statement in everything that we've been doing. This budget reflects that. We want to revitalize the program by working with the employer organizations to increase the ranks of the VPSO positions in rural Alaska. They are unacceptably low right now, and they do a fabulous job with what they have, but we know that there needs to be more. With respect to commercial fishing and hunting, we want to prioritize through our Alaska Wildlife Troopers Division the investigation and enforcement of egregious commercial fishing and hunting violations across the state to protect our natural resources. And narcotics and major crime investigations, ensuring that narcotics and major crimes are thoroughly investigated. This is through our Alaska Bureau of Investigations and our statewide drug enforcement unit, and ensure that those offenders are held accountable, and working with our state, local, and federal partners to dismantle drug trafficking and bootlegging organizations. So that was the tone that the commissioner set right off the bat. And with that, I'll just move real quickly to the next slide before we dig into the budget. DPS is our...
I'm sorry, maybe if we can go to a question. Representative Ortiz?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Under the category of Village Public Safety Officer Program, you spoke about revitalizing the VPSO program, and then you spoke about increasing the amount of people, the numbers of VPSOs. Is there anything more to revitalizing the program other than increasing the numbers? Is there going to be a little different look at the program, maybe how we could do it a little bit differently? I'm just asking. I'm not making that a suggestion. I'm just asking if that's part of the
To the chair, Representative Ortiz. A great question. One of the first things we did when I came to the department is we moved the VPSO program directly into the commissioner's office to provide it that prominence and oversight that I thought the program deserved, because I think it was falling off our charts. We recently have employed a director of the VPSO program, retired Colonel Joel Hard, and he has full freedom to change the program to where it currently is and where we want it to go. We've certainly reviewed the task force. I've talked to Chuck Topp, because he was on that task force. And what we're looking at doing, what we want to do is we want to provide more flexibility for the grantees to run the programs to the direction that meets their tribes or their communities. I think we've gained a lot of momentum. We've been working with Senator Olson, Representative Puckachuck. I know I had a conversation with Representative Edgman. We are totally committed to building up that program, and not only making it where we focus on our VPSOs, but to give the grantees freedom as a program to, if they don't want a VPSO, but they want somebody that deals with suicides in the villages. If you know, and I know that some of you guys understand how many suicides we have in our villages. I almost read about it every day in our commissioner's notification. If they decide that's their focus instead of having a full-time VPSO, we'll give them that flexibility to put that person there. So we just don't want to focus, because before what we've always done, we've focused on the actual VPSO. And that VPSO, as we talked before, his scope of mission has changed over the last 30 years from a more of a public safety officer that came from the village to more of a law enforcement officer that probably didn't grow up in that village, maybe not even in Alaska. So again, we want the program to meet the needs of the individual communities that want the VPSO. Our general policy right now is that any community that wants a VPSO, we want to get them a VPSO. Currently, we're budgeted for, because there's not positions like state positions, but we have funding for about 55 VPSOs. The governor's authorized another 10 positions, but realistically, we need to get back up to well over 100 VPSO positions. If you look at, I'll say 10 or 15 years ago, the Waikei Delta had almost all our VPSOs, between 20 and 30. Currently, we have 3. The Northwest Arctic Borough, I think, right now has 3. The Bethel region has 57 villages. I mean, we do have troopers in some of those villages, but there's probably 50 villages right now that don't have any law enforcement unless they have a BPO or a TPO. So our general philosophy as we move forward. And this is, you know, this is going to be a journey to include our increase our troopers and then also increase our BPSOs. Currently, we're authorized at 315 Alaska State Troopers, blue shirts. We want to get that up to about 415. We feel that at 415, we'll have an adequate law enforcement presence in the state. Currently, there's not one place in the state that we have an Alaska State Trooper that we have adequate service because we're just that short. So I guess I hope that answers your question.
Yes, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Commissioner. Just as a follow-up on that, how many VPSOs did you say there were versus now?
Currently, we have funding for 55. Okay. Currently, we have, I think, 48 boots on the ground. And the governor's budget will give us up to 65. Our ultimate goal under the Parnell administration was 121. I don't know where he came up with 21. But we got up to 118, and that would probably be about 2014, 2013. Then we started seeing a general decrease in the number of EPSOs. And part of that was related to, you know, the budget cuts that we took in, what, 15, 16, and 17. You know, the troopers lost 32 positions, not for AST, and if you add the wildlife, we were almost at 40 positions, and we saw the same budget cuts that we were seeing and with the BPSO program. And if you don't mind, I'll go a little bit further on the BPSO program. One of the things the department has been judged about on was the amount of money the BPSO program was turning back every year. Sometimes it was up to several million dollars, you know, and I think that was on us because, again, we ran the program like we run our own budget, and really that doesn't work for the BPSO program because, again, their costs are different than they are for our troopers in other areas of the state, and they're dealing with issues that, you know, from increased housing, there's just so many different avenues that we just weren't addressing. And I think that was a failure, not an intentional failure, because I was the colonel during part of that time, so, you know, it was on me too, as we looked at it wrong. And I apologize for that, because, again, I was in charge. But we're certainly going in a different direction, and we want to continue the direction. And we'll ask you in the legislature to be flexible when we make these decisions to support our grantees and our communities and our villages and our tribes to give us that flexibility and stand with us when we end up spending the budget. And sometimes maybe you might think it's questionable, but it meets the needs of that individual community.
Great, thank you. Representative Merrick.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I chair Department of Public Safety Finance Subcommittee. Representative LeBon's on it with me. And I just wanted to compliment Mr. Hard, who's just recently, very recently, taken over the VPSO program. And I was so impressed with the vision he has for this program. He is committed, he is passionate, and I really believe he has the right demeanor to run that program. So I just wanted to compliment him on that. And, you know, I look forward to what he's going to do in that program.
Thank you.
Great, thanks. Okay, I see no further questions. Ms. Howell.
Thank you again, Kelly Howell, for the record. On slide 3, there is not, I think, anywhere in this state that isn't touched by the Department of Public Safety, and so I'll have the Deputy Commissioner cover this slide real briefly.
Yeah, for the record, it's Leon Morgan. Our statewide impact, along with our own internal goals, and is a pretty big responsibility for the department. We are the Alaska's primary statewide law enforcement agency, and that carries a pretty significant burden on this department. We do direct we do directly support other agencies to include investigative assistance with major felony investigation and crimes. Obviously, search and rescue is a major undertaking that we're involved in as a department. Our training and how we train other law enforcement agencies and departments in the state through our Alaska Law Enforcement Training Academy, where we train our troopers alongside our local police departments, our VPSOs. We assist in training at the VPO Academy out in Bethel. And we also do domestic violence and sexual assault training for the state and across the state. We run the Alaska Public Safety Information System for the state of Alaska, which is our link into NCIC and all of those other federal criminal justice information service programs. And we also run the state's crime lab, which is the only crime lab in the state of Alaska.
Thank you. Please continue. Moving on to slide four, again for the record, this is Kelly Howell. So this slide is a 10-year look back of DPS's operating budget. One thing in hindsight after creating this slide, I do not have the dollar figures listed for the different fund sources. I would direct the committee's attention to the Legislative Finance Division's graphs, which actually did include the funding sources, so I do have those here as well. But just to give you kind of the 30,000-foot level, our FY23 budget request reflects an overall increase from FY22 of about $36.6 million, or about a 15% increase. 12.8% of that is unrestricted general fund, so about a $24 million increase in general fund. I do want to note, however, that $9.7 million of that overall increase is attributable to the transfer of the Alaska Public Safety Communications System from the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. So that you'll see later on in the presentation is a program that we're transferring from DMVA into DPS, and that comes with 24 permanent full-time positions and $9.7 million in increase to the department's overall budget. Slide five is, again, another 10-year look back of the Department of Public Safety's position history. So these are budgeted, authorized positions, both permanent full-time, permanent part-time, and non-perm positions. So you can see the trend over the past 10 years. There is a significant increase in FY23 over FY22 of 93 permanent full-time positions. Again, 24 of those are transferring in from the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Six positions are time status transfers, so they're existing positions within the department that we are transferring from permanent part-time status to permanent full-time status. Also in this request, there are 17 new state trooper positions. 14 of those are Alaska State Troopers, 3 are Alaska Wildlife Troopers, and then 46 civilian positions that we will cover throughout the presentation to not only provide support to troopers, but to enhance some of the other priority programs such as missing and murdered indigenous persons and domestic violence and sexual assault.
Thank you. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Because I don't necessarily think that this may, the appropriate area where I would bring this question up may not come up any better than this slide, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Is there an estimate, is there projections as to how many troopers you expect to retire within the next 5 years? And, of course, that connects back to your goal of recruitment and retention and those kinds of things. Are you going to speak about that later, or would now be an appropriate time to talk about that?
Representative Ortiz, through the chair, I can take that question. For the record, Leon Morgan. We have, in the next 1 to 5 years, we have just about 130 state trooper positions that are eligible for retirement. Now, we don't know how many of those will stay to that exact time period or who will move on or who will retire right at their retirement date of 25 years. So, yeah, that's on the horizon, and that's very critical to our recruitment and our retention efforts, making sure we keep the people we do hire here moving forward.
Thank you.
Representative Lebon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this slide shows your authorized filled positions, both permanent, part-time, full-time, et cetera, and then the request for additional positions in fiscal year 23. How many vacancies are you experiencing now? I know in prior subcommittee hearings the last couple, 3 years, you've been chasing after your churn, if you will. How are you doing in that area, and how many vacancies are you trying to fill in addition to adding the 17 additional trooper positions?
Representative Lebon, through the chair, Kelly Howell for the record. I'm going to advance to slide six really quickly, which is our Alaska or our state trooper position history. So the department, with respect to our Alaska state troopers and Alaska wildlife troopers, is currently carrying a vacancy in the mid-60s. So I believe in one of our presentations in subcommittee,
Colonel Barlow did reference a vacancies of 38 for the Alaska State Troopers, and that was taking into account the positions that we are going to have attend our academy here in the next 2 weeks. So the official vacancy count, because those individuals are not actually in the positions, is I believe 67 as of January 31st. We do anticipate that, is it 31 positions will be entering the academy this spring in end of February. And then we also anticipate a full academy of hopefully those same numbers in the fall. So that would come close. We are hoping to filling those vacancies, assuming, of course, that there will be some turnover during that time as well.
Representative LeBron.
Quick, thank you, Madam Chair. Follow-up. So you're adding an additional 17 to the six. Is it 67 or 60 openings, vacancies?
Through the co-chair, Representative LeBron, Leon Morgan, for the record. We do have, again, on paper, there's, I think, 67 vacancies, but we are giving job offers to this last recruitment cycle. So that number is actually going to be here next week in the around the 30 number. We are targeting and we are doing everything we can to maintain our recruitment levels every cycle at 30 positions. That is the number we believe that will keep us moving forward and that will clear our vacancies, accounting for our projected retirements and separations about 24 to 30, and getting us to a point by this time next year, we can be adding on to those additional positions. And so if we can go, we do 30 now, we got 30 come up in the fall, and then we can recruit that other 30 by this time next year, halfway through this FY23 budget cycle, we believe we're going to be well positioned to both fill our vacancies, fill these additional positions, but more to the point, like the commissioner commented on, our goal is to get even beyond these. We want to keep moving forward to 415, and we want to account for the upcoming retirements that we have pending. So, but to do that, we have to balance. In order to recruit, we have to have the open positions. And the worst thing that can happen to us, because this did happen to us in the past, is when we don't have the positions, we don't recruit. So when we don't recruit, we don't put anybody in the hopper to replace. And then so when we have those 24 to 30 separations, we immediately add to that severe vacancy, but yet we're now one cycle, which is almost a full year behind the power curve of replacing those positions. I know there's a lot of complexity there, but the goal here is to stay at that 30 number. That's the number we've identified that will keep us ahead of the curve.
And I appreciate it. Thank you, Madam Chair, for one last follow-up. And I know that it's a challenge, recruiting and retaining. You mentioned 14 additional trooper positions. Where will those positions be located?
Through the chair, through the co-chair, Representative LeBron, Leon Morgan for the record. Out of these 14, what we say blue shirt positions, we'll have two, or one in Fairbanks, one in Tok, and then we'll have a tactical flight officer in Fairbanks, tactical flight officer in Anchorage, one in Tok. One will be a sergeant for the what we call the Anchorage Services Unit for Sea Detachment, which is supporting rural Alaska out on the Aleutian Chain. And then we'll have 10 that will go to the training post and B Detachment.
One last.
Yes, follow-up?
That's in the Wasilla area. So, as I understand it, would that be correct? 5 in Wasilla, 5 in Palmer?
Through the co-chair, Representative Blond, yes. Yes.
And what condition on the ground has resulted in the need for that many troopers in those two communities versus other parts of the state?
Through the co-chair, Representative Vaughn, we have taken it upon ourselves interdepartmentally to move positions geographically to those areas of need, to include putting 7 ABI investigators out to Western Alaska, to moving a position into Tok, for example, that because there was a dire need in that Tok area. The best way to think about it is when we add positions to our department, we have to add them into these training posts because ultimately they move out of those posts into other areas of state of need. And so we don't look at like this is a permanent position forever in this area. It makes it easier for us to have the positions in these training posts so that when we quite frankly, decimate the training posts with transfers out, we have a deeper bench moving forward in the future. The B detachment right now has our least number of PCNs assigned out of all of our detachments. Well, it's actually the exact same as A detachment. And it has, quite frankly, the highest population to serve in our area.
And one last comment. I assume Fairbanks is a training post also.
And through the chair, Representative Vaughn, yes, it is.
Thank you.
Such a good advocate for Fairbanks. Representative Josephson.
Thank you, through the chair. Before I ask my question, let me just say at the outset, I'm really grateful for your efforts and your commitment. And so this isn't meant to be a tough question, per se, but your predecessor, because I was sitting here, a couple years ago said, or she didn't say, that the inference was the problem is resolved. And she described, and I remember literally this hearing, X number of people going to the academy in the spring, Y going in the fall, it's all in good order. There's something going on here, and it's not just at DPS, it's at DOT, it's in our teacher ranks. People don't desire state employment the way they used to. And what would it take to make the honor of serving the state as a state trooper so attractive that that they would fill out the vacancies and not leave?
To the chair, Representative Joseph, I think I'll take this one. And it actually is a pretty tough question. What I will say is throughout the nation, we have difficulties. Every police department in the nation has difficulties recruiting police officers, state troopers, and we're no exception. Where we stand out right now, this state, is that we have great support for our law enforcement officers compared to some other areas of the state. And we have seen lateral troopers from other sheriff's departments and city police departments come to Alaska because of that and come directly to the Alaska State Troopers. Probably since the late 90s, the department has struggled hiring its troopers. And there's a myriad of reasons for that. And I think I'll come back to Representative LeBron's issue question a little bit. Part of the problems that we have in retaining troopers is the amount of work that we expect them to do. No matter where they're at in the state, the expectations of an Alaska State Trooper is probably higher than any other law enforcement agent or trooper, police officer or trooper than any other state, including probably, we're probably closest to the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. I've got troopers that have a caseload in their queue of over 100. I've got sergeants that have, I had a sergeant send me an email from a rural post. He's not only supervising people, but he's handling a caseload of 80. There is no way that one person can do that and still supervise their people, still go out and make arrests, and then complete the reports, go to grand jury, and go to trial, if we go to trial on it, if we're lucky. What we have to address, not so much as our recruiting, is retaining our people, regardless if it's our civilian staff or our commission staff. Retention, and part of that part of retention is we have to have enough support out there for our people to want them to come to work. I mean, we can't force them to work overtime all the time. When we have additional overtime for like highway enforcement, it is hard for us to get anybody to do it because they're working so much darn overtime. And I know that you guys want to see our overtime budget. How do we stop it? We can't. When the phone rings, we have to respond. And so that's part of the things. That's why, again, we want to get our numbers up to where we adequately provide law enforcement services to this state. We're not doing that. There's not one place in this state. It's not in Fairbanks. It's not in the Matsu Valley. It's not in Tok, Glen Allen, Bethel. We're not doing it. We're not meeting that need. And the only way to do that is put more boots on the ground. The crime rate is not going to go away. The sexual assaults aren't going to go away unless we're there to prevent that. So, you know, when we talk about our wellness of our troopers, I mean, we have a wellness committee. We try to provide those little things that make life better for them. But realistically, the big factor there is providing the support necessary for them to do their job and be able to go home at night and not worry about the phone ringing because they're on standby, getting called out at 3 o'clock in the morning because there's a crash or there's a DV in Glen Allen that they got to respond to, or say Kenny Lake and they live in Glen Allen 50 miles by themselves. What other law enforcement agency responds to a domestic violence complaint active by themselves? We're the only ones. Ask APD how many cars they send when they handle on domestic violence. Ask the Fairbanks Police Department. I mean, realistically, this state is asking way too much from their Alaska State Troopers. And part of my job is to try to make their life better where we can keep our troopers. We want to keep them. When we spend a lot of money training them, outfitting them, we can't afford them to leave at 4 or 5 years and go to another police department in the lower 48 where they have backup, they have a retirement system, they have, you know, they have all these things that we don't have. So I don't know if I answered your question or not, but that's the best I can do. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Looking at slides 5 and 6, I assume that slide 6 does not include the VPSOs.
Representative Thompson, through the chair, Kelly Howell for the record, that's correct. These are DPS employees, and Village Public Safety Officers are actually the employees of the 10 grantee organizations. Follow-up?
Follow-up, then. So the VPSOs are not actually state employees?
Through the chair to Representative Thompson, correct. They are not state employees.
Okay, I'm just curious. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Commissioner Cockrell, you used the term, and I'm not doubting it at all. I just wanted a little more. What makes up caseload for a trooper? What do you mean when you say caseload? How does that work for a trooper? I know it works for a teacher. I know it works, you know, how it works in other areas, but caseload for a trooper, what does that mean?
Well, that means that the troopers went out on a, I'll call it a call service. That could be a theft from a yard. It could be a 911 call where we've got a domestic violence. So every criminal offense that trooper goes to, and it could even be a DUI, driving while license suspended or revoked, those are cases or incidents, and that's a caseload he holds. So until he closes that case out, you know, they can file charges and everything, but he's still got to get his reports done, you know, and get those criminal complaints filed. If it's a felony case, they got to go to grand jury. I mean, so this stuff just keeps adding up. And if you, again, you take the Valley, for example, the average caseload in there is between 80 to over 100. And so what we become is report takers and not so much solving crime, even though if you look at the amount of arrests we make around the state, you'd be surprised. I mean, I was just looking in the last 2 days, we've arrested 3 people for sexual abuse of a minor. In the last 2 days, because I get notifications of all deaths in Alaska, all search and rescues, and all serious crimes. So we've had 3 SAMs, 1 in Fairbanks, 2 in the Valley, 1 child pornography, downloading child pornography, abusive child pornography. So, I mean, those are 4 major felony arrests in just 1 day, basically. That's what we do every day around the state. That's what we do. Right now, I don't know where we're at. One of our villages out west, we've got a CERT operation going on because we had an individual go into one of our schools in the middle of the night, point a gun at the janitor, chase the janitor out. So right now we've got the school. Of course, it's locked down because he's in it. We're responding to see if we can resolve this peacefully. I mean, this is what we do every day. We do it. We make it look routine. Sometimes it makes a good paper, sometimes it don't.
Thank you. That was very helpful. I appreciate that that answer. And in the area of recruitment and retention, I'm not sure. It's probably obvious to everybody else on this committee, but me. but is there a significant pay differential for people serving out in rural areas compared to people serving in urban areas or quote better served areas?
Through the chair, there is. There's COLAs in our rural areas. And I will say for recruitment, the department has offered it, signing a bonus or incentive, and it's $20,000, and that has certainly helped our recruitment numbers. Like I say, we're really pleased, happy, whatever, with our 30 that we made job offers to. We've got 5 still in the hopper for this academy. We've streamlined our recruiting process. So we've tiered our laterals where we can, some of our laterals, especially if they're from Alaska, went through our academy, they're not going back to the academy, they're going right almost directly to an FTO program where we can get them on the road faster. So we are, our recruitment efforts, our recruitment team, and from both divisions have really stepped in to push our efforts, because we know we have to do it. We have to, in order to survive as a department, we have to recruit people. We've sent a group down to Tacoma, Washington. We had really good success there for 2 days. We sent a recruitment team, and they were overwhelmed by the number of people that came in, and we got several applicants from that, and we're going to continue focusing on it. Because, again, out of all law enforcement agencies in this country, we're kind of a shining light, the state is, because we support our people. When Representative Vance went on the House floor and when our trooper was shot in Anchor Point, that was huge morale boost for our department. We're still facing the cutbacks we had in 15 and 17. Those were devastating to the department. We lost, almost 40 positions in 2 years. Try to recruit when you're cutting trooper positions and when the OMB is telling you we're going to have to lay off troopers if you hire any. So our academies were like 3 and 4. We still haven't got over that hump. And we still have that stigma, because we don't know what happens to state government. It seems like every summer we want to shut state government down, even though our troopers know that they're not going to get laid off because we're an exempt. But it still puts stressors on them when, they say the government's going to shut down July 1st because we haven't signed the budget. Those things affect employees.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for that. You said $20,000 signing bonuses.
Yes.
Is that correct? What is the commitment then from a recruit?
Essentially what we do is if they pass the academy, they get a $10,000 bonus. And if they pass their FTO program and probational period, they get their second $20,000.
And how long is the probation period?
A year.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much. We have questions from Representative Thompson and then Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Commissioner, I sure don't envy your position because I don't understand how you can have a trooper in a remote area and he's going to end up having to come to an urban area to go to trial, so you have a vacancy there, or he's sick, or he goes on vacation. How do you balance your force to try to cover those areas so that they aren't without a trooper during those periods of time?
Well, I think Colonel Bartle's on. I know what I did when I was the colonel. I'm not sure what Colonel Bartle does. If he's on the line, I'd let him talk to that, if that's all right.
Colonel Barlow?
Yes, ma'am.
Are you able to help Representative Thompson with his question?
Yes, ma'am. For the record, this is Colonel Brian Barlow, Division Director for the Alaska State Troopers. Representative Thompson, through the chair, I guess to best answer your question, we utilize staff from all over the place to backfill places that may be short on staff. So if a rural post goes short due to leave or training or illness, we backfill from other areas and utilize state aircraft and other conveyances to pull from different areas to backfill. Does that answer your question, sir?
Pretty much. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. It's hard to talk about, but going back to some of the cases that you highlighted just in the last few days that have come to light, how often are these perpetrators repeat offenders in situations like this?
Through the chair, I couldn't just give you a answer.
Is it fairly common? I'm sorry, follow up.
Yes, follow up.
Is it fairly common for a perpetrator to have multiple victims and repeat offenses?
Well, I will say Alaska has a high, I lost the word now, recidivism rate in this state. You know, what we do see, and our trooper was shot by somebody that was on PED or released from, on essentially an OR release to corrections, and it wasn't corrections' fault, but we were serving an arrest. He was arrested. They released him from jail on the second time, and as we had a warrant out, our trooper went and contacted him, and he was shot five times. The only thing that saved his life was his vest. He had, with 45, all five slugs went to his vest, four to his vest, one to his arm. He's still recouping from that, and that's been, several months.
Yes, follow up.
Thank you. I'm grateful that you guys have that equipment, so we definitely need to make sure those types of things are funded, well funded for your department. But I guess what I'm trying to understand is we have roughly 60% of Alaskan women who have indicated that they've been sexually assaulted, a victim of domestic violence, some type of offense to that nature. And I guess what I'm wondering is it 60% of the, Alaskans that are committing these offenses, or is it a much lower percent, like 10%, 20% of the population that's committing crimes on so many victims that a large number of victims could possibly be avoided if it's the same person repeating the offense?
Well, I think I'll ask Diane from CVSA to answer this, but I'll hit on it a little bit. I know you're talking about the UAA victimization survey, and as a state, and as I kind of opened up in my comments, this state has a problem with domestic violence and sexual assault. And even though our rates might have went down a little bit, as you can see, they're starting to creep back up again. And there could be many reasons for it. I'm not going to speculate those reasons. And I think the victimization surveys are accurate, probably more so than even our crime rate, because realistically, very seldom do you have a domestic violence where it's the first time it's happened. This was the first time. It's usually not the case. It's usually multiple times, and then finally they get law enforcement or advocacy agency involved in it, and then they're arrested. So I'll let her try to answer that for you.
Thank you. Brief at ease. Thank you. House Finance back on the record. Ms. Casto?
Good afternoon, Representative Merrick, Chair Merrick. I wish I had the exact answer for that question that was asked. I don't. But I will say, and the Commissioner hit on it, is that in our victimization survey, first of all, I agree with him that it's one of the most accurate reflections of the number of cases because it's from the victims themselves. It's not those who report, which we know there's a lot of non-reporting of these cases, so it's a very good and broad look at these cases. What we do know from the victimization survey, but we don't have exact numbers, is that many of them are repeat. That they have had multiple incidents from the same perpetrator. So we know that is happening. I don't want to guess, but we really do have a smaller number of perpetrators than we have victims. There's a lot of repeat. It's also, they go from one partnership, one relationship to another relationship, and so we continue to see, and that's part of our goal, is to how do we stop the perpetrators and reframe that issue so that they stop having multiple victims.
Thank you. That was what I was trying to get to. I appreciate that.
Thank you very much. Nice. Representative Edgman.
You might stay here for a minute.
There was an incident in the Antioch, was it about a week ago?
Yes.
And the U.S. Marshals were called out there. I was just wondering, Commissioner, if you could give us a sense of that effort in Alaska, the U.S. Marshals, and whether that's more just a small sort of concentrated application of the resources, which I think it is, but maybe just can you give the committee some sense of their presence in Alaska?
All right. To the chair, essentially we have a partnership with the U.S. Marshals, just like we do with the FBI and other federal agencies. We actually have a member on their task force, Fugitive Task Force, and we utilize the Marshals on high-risk arrests, essentially, is what we do. I don't know that they have a huge number of marshals in Alaska, probably less than 10, that's about right. And so I guess that's kind of where we're at. I mean, we partner with them. They do assist us, like I say, during high-risk arrests, which we classified that as a high risk at that point in time. That's why they were in Antioch.
Follow-up?
And I think it goes without saying that those high-risk events probably have increased over the years. And I wouldn't hazard a location, you know, Western Alaska per se or something like that. It's probably more statewide nature, but is that an accurate assessment?
I would say, based on my career, I would say that's fairly accurate. The use of attempted deadly force on our law enforcement officers in Alaska has risen since I became a trooper. I mean, and you know, the unfortunate events is that we also have to use deadly force. And I think if you look throughout the course of our history, you can see those events have continued to go up. Our activations of our CERT team, which is a SWAT team, seem to have increased over the years too. And that's just based on my experience.
Follow up?
Yeah, and this might have to be held for later, but I just want to ask at some point about the drug search dogs. I can't remember the term. We talked about it in prior years. But if that's later on the slide deck, I'd be happy to wait. Just maybe the number of how many teams you have, that's dogs and handlers.
You know, through the chair, I think we're going to have to get you that in writing. I know that we have drug dogs and we have dual-purpose dogs, patrol dogs. So if I don't want to just go off the guess. Unless Colonel Barlow has that information, I'd call my lifeline.
Colonel Barlow?
Hello. For the record, Colonel Barlow, Division of Alaska State Troopers again. I don't have that exact number, but we will be compiling that information. I do know that we have both dual-purpose canine teams and single-purpose drug detection dogs located in various locations throughout the state.
Thank you. I see no further questions. Please continue.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Again, for the record, Kelly Howell with Public Safety. So what I'm going to do over these next 10 slides is give a highlight of our significant operating budget changes. And this is kind of following what is in the Legislative Finance Division's budget book, but it is a lot of information because we do have quite a significant budget request. So as I'm reading through these, I hope that it will kind of prompt conversation so that it's not me just reading slides, but that it is prompting some conversation in respect to why we are asking for these particular items.
Ms. So, Howe, would you prefer to have questions at the end of each slide or go through all the 10 slides and then have questions? What's easier for you?
Well, Madam Co-Chair, I would certainly defer to you, but I think our preference would be for me to read just the slide and then see if there's questions related to that specific slide. We do, again, have multiple folks online as well as in the gallery that can answer questions specific to those each slide, so that would be great.
That's what we tend to do.
Thank you. So the first slide is our fire and life safety appropriation. We are requesting to add a deputy fire marshal too in Bethel for rural fire investigations, and adding funding for the equipment and support of that deputy fire marshal, which would be one-time funding, and then adding some funding for rural fire training and education. So that's the total request for the fire and life safety appropriation. Under the Alaska State Troopers appropriation, we're requesting to establish a new dispatch services allocation. So there's no funding added for this request. This is a structural change in our budget to shift funding from AST detachments into a new allocation that will better identify the true costs of providing dispatch services, both through our own personnel as well as through the contractual costs that that the department has. Along those same lines, we're requesting to add funding for a dispatch services contract with the Kenai Peninsula Borough. This is a new contract this fiscal year. Further, we are adding 12 state trooper positions and 2 public safety technician positions. This particular request has no additional funding associated with it. And then expanding in-car video storage services for our troopers.
Representative LeBon and then Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And with the additional trooper positions and the public safety technician positions, no additional funding means you're going to absorb these additional positions. And might we anticipate a budget request and adjustment in January of next year if you are successful and you fill these positions?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative LeBon, yes, that's exactly. We've spent a lot of time today already talking about the challenges we've had in the past about filling our ranks. And this was a compromise to basically to prove up, to be honest with you, that we can get the positions, we can move forward, we can have a sustained and successful recruitment, not just one cycle, but multiple cycles to get the positions we need. And we fully expect to come back with an amended budget.
Thank you. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Under the category of dispatch services, Deputy Commissioner Morgan, you and I have talked about this over the years. What's the current status of dispatch in the Ketchikan station, if you would? If you could tell me about that.
Yeah. Through the chair, Representative Ortiz. Yes, we have, sir. Had some lively discussions, which I've appreciated. I really have. And the Ketchikan Dispatch Center is, it still has a capacity to dispatch. We have left what we call a consulate radio in that facility. We've kept the positions in Ketchikan, and we've adjusted those the focus of that center to handle what we call our online police reporting team and our validations team. So dispatch encompasses a lot of different administrative functions, and what we're trying to do is maximize personnel in an area with the bandwidth available and introduce a new capacity. We're going to go live here in the middle of March to have an online police reporting function to pull off reports that have to go to troopers all the time. So like I said, that function is in place. We're going to go live here in 2 weeks, and we have we see the same amount of positions in Ketchikan that we had when we had the ESD positions. They're now just criminal justice technicians.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you. So for clarification, in terms of actual dispatch of troopers to potential locations of crime, et cetera, that function is not carried out by anybody in Ketchikan at this point?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, correct. That's handled out of the Fairbanks Pegger Road facility. They're still dispatching for the Ketchikan area.
Follow
and,
up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And in relationship to the category of effectiveness of dispatch, has there been any analysis as to whether or not there's been an increase reporting of ineffective dispatch. It just logically, it just seems to me, and I know we've spoken about this before, that it'd be difficult to have as an effective dispatch from somebody up in Fairbanks not familiar with the area as somebody in Ketchikan. Has there been an attempt at recording data in relationship to a study like that?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I assure you we've been very sensitive to complaints about the dispatch operations and how it's been handled in Ketchikan. I know of two complaints that have come in regarding dispatch over the last, it's been about two full years now or over that. Those two complaints were determined not to be a dispatch knowledge, but just it's a communication about when we should deploy and dispatch our troopers out of a standby status. I will reinforce that, and we've been telecommunicating dispatching from Fairbanks for wide areas for over a decade now, to include Kodiak Island from Fairbanks, and really the value is those troopers in our communities know the areas as well, so they have that knowledge base. They know where they're going. They know who these folks are, and so I do feel confident in our ability and our telecommunicators, our dispatchers, to dispatch across the state. It's a challenge, but we have a good telecommunications infrastructure, and we've been doing it for well over a decade outside of the Ketchikan area.
That's enough for right now. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the heads up. Yeah.
Thank you. I actually have two questions. The 14 new positions, should those all be filled? Do you have an estimated cost of what that would be?
To the co-chair, yes, we do have that. I don't have it actually in front of me, but we do have that cost.
That would be perfect. Thank you. And then regarding the in-store, in-car video services, how long do you guys have to keep videos, whether they're body cams or car cams?
To the chair, Representative Merrick, that just depends on the case and the type of incident or contact that we have occurred. So it could be as little as 90 days. It could be as many as in perpetuity if it's a homicide case, for example. So we deal with retention. There's statutes and regulations that govern our retention, and so it just varies on the contact.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Thompson.
Madam Co-Chair, might be a bit of a stretch, but out of curiosity, with the broadband federal dollars coming in, do you guys have problems with real remote areas getting communications to operate properly?
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, we do. Yes, it's we have part of the reason Public Safety Communications is coming over to DPS is it gives us an ability to really move that system, embed it into the public safety response mission set instead of it being in a different department somewhere else. And that has, obviously, that component has a significant telecommunications capability, but it also allows us to leverage emerging technologies like low Earth orbit mesh satellite networks that give us latency needed for public safety communications. We're going to look at all of those things in order to expand our connectivity and our interoperability across all regions of the state, specifically rural Alaska, and we think there's ways to do that.
Thank you. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. In relationship to the question just asked by Representative Thompson, are you aware that last year there was a connectivity breakdown between Ketchikan and Fairbanks, and that then resulted, I guess, in an emergency request for Ketchikan to take over dispatch? And I'm wondering if that were to happen again, if you don't have anybody in Ketchikan doing dispatch, how that would work.
To the chair, Representative Ortiz, when that happens in the LMR system, the Ketchikan facility still is in site trunking, so it still works, and we still have consulate radios there. That we have people who have that dispatch experience that are still there. We've just changed their job titles, and we are going to maintain that emergency dispatch functionality for when the facility goes into what we call site trunking. I'm not aware, actually, of that. I'll have to research that, I could talk to you offline about what that incident is, but I'm not aware of an emergency request for us to have the city dispatch for us.
So that's what would happen, would be the dispatch duties would go to Ketchikan City Police if that event would take place in the future?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, no, we would maintain, again, that facility is in site trunking. And so it still works locally. It's just not interconnected to the wide area network. And so we have personnel and staff in Ketchikan that still understand the components of emergency dispatch to provide that service until that wide area connectivity can be fixed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Please continue.
Moving to slide number 9. Again, this is Kelly Howell for the record. Continuing with the Alaska State Trooper appropriation, we are requesting full funding for the positions that were added in FY21 at 75% funding. Those several of those positions are now filled, so we are requesting funding to fund them at 100%. This request is an increase from the original governor's budget request. There is an additional $170,800 that was included in governor's amend to fully fund the positions that have been filled. So we are also requesting funding to establish office space for our troopers in Togiak and Hooper Bay. We've got a request for positions to address domestic violence and sexual assault, as well as the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Persons Initiative. And we're requesting to add 4 criminal justice technician positions.
Please continue.
Moving to slide number 10, in our Alaska Bureau of Investigation, we're requesting to add 4 additional positions. And our Technical Crimes Unit, we are requesting to add 2 additional positions. For the Alaska Wildlife Trooper allocation, we're requesting 3 wildlife trooper positions. Again, this also has no additional funding associated with it. And then I mentioned earlier the time status change for our seasonal part-time public safety technicians. We are requesting to change those to permanent full-time positions.
Ms. Howe, with the request for the 14 positions and how much it would cost if those were all filled, can you add the wildlife troopers to that list as well?
Yes, Madam Co-Chair, okay. We have that information that I will be happy to provide.
Thank you. Representative Edgman.
Yeah, this is a general question. It might be beyond the scope of this conversation, but you know, the criminal justice system, I think of it as an offensive line on football. You know, you've got the courts, you've got law, you've got correction, public safety, mental health trust authority, Department of Health and Social Services. So it's a package in some ways. In some ways it's not. But does the governor have like a criminal justice cabinet, if you will, or sub-cabinets, or a team that looks at all this holistically? Because I'm looking at all of these adds to one element of the offensive line, but I know correspondingly they're not in other departments per se, but that's, you know, that's not to be, you know, I'm not meaning that in any negative way, of course. Very thrilled to support what was before the committee today, but it just seems that you know, a lot of what generates these increases in positions need to be attended elsewhere, and I don't know if that's if it's, you know, commensurately funded, and again, it's probably not something you can respond to, but I think it's a very legitimate point. You know, the prevention side, which you know, you've got an arm in your department to speak to that, but you know, I chair the Corrections Budget Subcommittee, and a lot of what these new positions are going to produce are going to be absorbed over the Department of Corrections and possibly the Department of Health and Social Services. It's a bigger picture. I don't know if you have a response to that, but I'll just put that on the record because I think it is it warrants some consideration somewhere along the way.
Through the chair, I appreciate those comments, and I don't really have a good answer for you, but I. You know, I am on the Criminal Justice Commission, and I mean, we don't specifically talk about each department's position or positions that we're putting in our budget, but it gives me a little bit bigger scope of what some of the other agencies are doing, because they're also on it.
Can I?
Yes, follow up?
Real quick, I know time is getting on here. So the Criminal Justice Commission is a separate entity.
It is.
friend across the way there who knows more about this than I do, but I don't think that's a sort of a subtenant of the department, if I remember right. But my question was, is, you know, Commissioner, as a member of the governor's cabinet, you're obviously privy to discussions at the cabinet level and with the governor and his inner team and so on and so forth. But is there those kind of conversations taking place that involve all of the those elements on the offensive line?
Well, through the chair, that's a difficult question because I certainly have conversations with the administration on the direction of our department, and at times there's other members of the cabinet in those conversations at high levels. And I'll probably just leave it at that. I'm trying to see where the bleed over is for these positions for our other departments, because I see these as specifically to our department, not corrections. I don't see, at least these positions here, I don't see where they would touch corrections. Health and Social Services, as you know, Health and Social Services is a huge department. So I guess I'm not really understanding your question. I understand that we need to coordinate when we're adding more positions, because there are potentially bleed overs, especially for our department into mental health issues, because we deal with a lot of folks that have mental health issues, and we provide support for Department of Corrections. But I guess that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Yes, Representative Edgman.
And I respect that. This is a question that's, you know, maybe if we had members of the governor's team or perhaps even for the chief of staff or something like that. But where I was trying to get at is, you know, I look at all these additional positions. You're going to generate more people to go to the Department of Corrections. I mean, you have to, because that's it's just the way it works. And at the same time, it's going to be more impact on the court system. And you know, ultimately and indirectly or further on down the line, maybe the Department of Law or Health and Social Services, which on the preventative side plays a big role. So that's the point I was trying to make. It's maybe esoteric and not applicable.
No, I appreciate the question. I will say, potentially, yes, more people go to jail. But what this allows us to do is higher quality cases, where when we do arrest somebody, you know, they're held accountable for their actions, and it provides the tools necessary for our department to do the job that we're obligated to do. And as the commissioner and the deputy commissioner and the folks here, is we have an obligation to put forward our best foot forward to what we think is what I consider the direction the department should go. I mean, that's essentially why they hired me, and this is what we're trying to, this is what we're attempting to do.
Thank you, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And I appreciate Representative Edgman's line of questioning. And I would like to even expand it a little bit further in the sense that what, in essence, you know, nobody questions, and we all support the troopers' role in Alaska's fight against crime. That's ultimately, you know, something that we need to have law and order. We need to have safety out there, all those kinds of things. I'm very much in support of that effort. However, really, when we talk about it, we have to do a broader effort at looking upstream and seeing where we need to make investments upstream so that we don't have, like you just expect, that we're going to have an increasing crime problem as we move forward, because that's what the statistics show. But how can we get to the point, and this is obviously a big question, and it's not solely the responsibility of the Commissioner of Public Safety, but how can we get it so that we're actually investing in society in a way where in the future, we don't have to expect higher crime rates and higher arrest rates and all those kinds of things. And to me, when we're looking at the use of resources, public dollars, we do need to do a better job of looking upstream and, you know, areas like education, things like that, where if we can make those kinds of investments, maybe we can't. Maybe we won't always have to have a look at higher and higher crime rates, et cetera. So anyway, I just want to add on to that.
No, through the chair, I appreciate that. And I understand the holistic approach we should do when it comes to providing I guess, law enforcement and a safety net for the folks that need it. I think the big problem is first of all, we do our budget every year process, and it's hard to coordinate that. And we go through election cycles, and you know, one year I may be there, next year somebody else might be in my position. Same with the governor and the legislature. And it's hard to sit down as a group when we have turnover like that every year and actually tackle those big issues. Because you're right, as a state, we don't do a very good job there. And each department is focused on their mission like I am. And I'm bringing it to you, to my best foot forward on my mission. And I haven't sat down. I've talked to the Department of Corrections, but I haven't really sat down with the other departments to say, what are you guys looking at? And maybe that's on me. But I see what you're saying. And I think in a perfect world, I think that would be great. So,
thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Please continue.
Moving on to slide number 11. Again, for the record, this is Kelly Howell. Continuing in the Alaska State Troopers appropriation under our aircraft section, we are requesting to add two State Trooper tactical flight officers and an aircraft pilot. The tactical flight officers are located in Anchorage and Fairbanks. The civilian pilot will be in Dillingham. We're requesting to add funding for aircraft maintenance and repairs and essentially basic operating expenses for our aircraft section of $1.8 million, and adding funding for large and medium vessel fuel and parts. Moving on to our Village Public Safety Officer program on slide 12, we are requesting to add a tribal liaison position, which is a new position in our department, really to state government. There isn't currently a specific job class for this position. Adding funding for the 10 additional Village Public Safety Officers that the Commissioner has discussed, and then also funding a salary increase for those VPSOs to assist with recruitment and retention. On slide 13, we're touching on our Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. The funding associated with this, the FY23 budget, is a one-time funding for victim services grants. This is to fill the gap that has been created by the reduction in federal Victims of Crime Act funding, adding two program coordinator positions, one to manage victim services and one to manage perpetrator intervention programs. And then one-time funding for a study under the Alaska Family Justice Center model.
Representative Laban.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And on the Alaska Family Justice Center model study at $500,000, why do I have a feeling that's a very pricey amount to pay for a study? And help me feel comfortable and warm about that.
Representative Laban, through the chair. So the Alaska Family Justice Center model is, I believe Diane Casto spoke to it in our subcommittee. It is part of the governor's People First initiative. And what this funding will do is fund a feasibility study. It would be a contract, a professional services contract, for someone to evaluate the effectiveness or the ability for this Family Justice Center model to be implemented in areas across the state. As Ms. Casto can articulate better than myself, this model is, can be effective in areas where the resources are available. However, in smaller communities, this particular model, which is also known as kind of the through one door concept, where a person who's been victimized can receive all services in one facility, whether that be legal, advocacy, medical, law enforcement, to focus on a more victim-centered approach to handling that. So this is a concept that will work in areas where we know those resources are available. So finding whether or not this will work in rural areas of the state, identifying stakeholders, partners, will it cost the full $500,000? I suppose we don't know until we actually procure for a professional services contract, but that is the estimate that we are currently provided.
If I may, Madam Chair, and I guess that was my point, is that $500,000 just to place a hold on in your budget for a study that may cost only half that amount? Or are we advertising to somebody who might do that study asked for 500,000.
Representative LeBond, through the chair, that is a fair statement. And certainly, you know, the state procurement rules require that we put something like this out to bid, and it would be a competitive solicitation. And there are rules in terms of how those contracts are awarded, so it could come in lower than the 500,000.
Should it come in lower than 500,000, do we get a refund?
Co-Chair Merrick, I suppose that would be a question I would have to ask OMB.
Okay, yeah. No, I actually would be curious because, or does it just, you can use that rest of that money elsewhere in the department? That would be interesting to know. Thank you. All right, please continue.
Moving on to slide number 14, under our statewide support appropriation, the commissioner's office is also requesting to add a tribal liaison position, which will assist with engagement and enhancing our collaboration and communication with tribes throughout the state. Funding in our information services section for two analyst programmers, a GIS analyst, and two data communication specialists to assist with our line of business areas. We're also requesting to increase our designated program receipt authority for our criminal history background checks and funding six criminal justice positions to support validation audits in our public safety information network system to ensure those records are accurate timely. Continuing on with our statewide support appropriation on slide 15, we're requesting increased federal receipt authority both for our criminal records improvement projects and for federal grants that the crime lab receives for forensics, DNA, and sexual assault kit tracking. We are requesting funding for six positions to reduce turnaround time on DNA testing. This is a priority for the department in terms of turning around the processing of sexual assault kits to 90 days. And then here's where you'll see the transfer of the Alaska Public Safety Communication Services from the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs and the funding associated with that. And finally, Madam Co-Chair, on slide 16, our Violent Crimes Compensation Board. The budget change associated with this appropriation is a reduction in authority due to the decreased availability of restorative justice account funding to the Crime Victims Compensation Fund. So this is a reduction to the Violent Crimes Compensation Board.
Representative Edgman.
Yeah, I think more as a concluding statement since we're through the slide deck, but I just want to, the Commissioner and Ms. Howell and I had this conversation in my office, but just put it on the record, the need for as much law enforcement as practical in the Lake and Peninsula area, more specifically in the lake communities, Kakanak, Igaugig, Pedro Bay, Mount Dalton, Iliam, New Haven, Port Albert area. And we've talked about this. I'm not asking for any immediate update or anything like that, because I think we covered the conversation. I guess the last thing I'd like to say while I've got the mic is that I really appreciate, Commissioner, you coming on board. Worked with you when you were the head of the troopers a number of years ago. Ms. Howell, you've been with a number of commissioners. I know you're dedicated to public servants. Things are going to get better on your watch. I'm convinced of it. And Mr. Morgan, appreciate working with you as well.
Thank you.
I agree with that. Representative Josephson.
Thank you, the Chair. Explain that last slide. Why is there a decreased availability of restorative justice funding, if you know?
Representative Josephson, through the Chair, the funding from the restorative justice account is funded, it's a separate account in the dividend fund, and it's funded by the amount of dividend funds that would have gone to individuals who are otherwise ineligible. Due to criminal offenses. So that amount has decreased, as well as the amount of the dividend decreasing, which subsequently results in a decrease in the amount of funding available to appropriate into the restorative justice funding.
And a
yes,
new,
follow-up?
Actually, a new question.
New question.
To be honest, through the chair, Commissioner, what last year, the Department of Law wanted to shift the cost of municipal prosecution of felonies to municipalities. And the subcommittee I chair, Department of Law subcommittee, resisted that, and it didn't happen.
And one, the reason I mention that is one could argue that we shouldn't, if we're consistent, maybe we shouldn't require boroughs to pay for their own public safety. Some boroughs, or all boroughs. My question is, how many trooper positions would be made available for other duties if boroughs were required to have their own police forces? The way, for example, the North Slope Borough does.
Through the chair, first of all, I will tell you that the Department of Public Safety has no authority over dictating to the boroughs what they need to pay for, what they do. Essentially, you know, that is a policy decision that the administration needs to make and the legislature needs to make. It's not up to me as the commissioner of Department of Public Safety. I can tell you how many positions we have in each of our detachments that cover those boroughs, but as of right now, I mean, our responsibility is to provide law enforcement, and we'll continue to do so.
Yes, follow up.
Are you comfortable estimating what the number of troopers is that cover first, I don't know if it's first class boroughs or what, but for example, the North Star Borough, the Mansu Borough, et cetera?
You know, through the chair, I'm going to wimp out on this, and I'm not comfortable giving an answer because I don't know. Because there's so many variables, I can't give you an answer for that. To be fair,
Ms. Howe, you mentioned the Crime Victim Compensation Fund. Those are for folks that the money comes from folks that do not qualify to receive a dividend. What are the parameters for folks not being able to receive a dividend?
Madam Co-Chair, I'm probably going to have to get back to you on that, but there is statutorily, in the permanent fund dividend statutes, the eligibility requirements. And so there are certain categories of individuals who are ineligible due to being incarcerated and other reasons. So I can get you the specific information on that, refer you to those statutes, as well as how the Crime Victim Compensation Fund is capitalized.
Yeah, that would be helpful because, you know, I have heard that if you're incarcerated, you don't get your dividend, but do you get it back immediately upon release? I'm just curious how that works. And we have a question from Representative Thompson.
Madam Co-Chair. Out of curiosity, ankle monitors were set up in place to try to get less people out of prisons where they have to pay so much per day. What's the relationship between the Department of Justice, the Department of Corrections, and the Alaska State Troopers on ankle monitors, and who tracks them, and who takes care of them?
Through the chair, I don't know if I want to give this to DC or not. Essentially, Department of Corrections is responsible for ankle monitors. Usually, we'll get notified if a person violates that, and then we'll go out and arrest them, or their PED will go out and take care of it. But we don't monitor. We're not actively involved in that program.
Thank you. On Teams, we have a question from Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm echoing. Do you want me to turn something down? Hold on.
You sound good on our end.
Okay. I guess this is almost a rhetorical question, but following in the line of Representative Edgman and Ortiz's comments, And the definition of public safety, although most of what your department does is, I would guess, react to incidents, and following the lineage of, you know, cops, courts, and corrections as to what happens when an individual commits a crime, I'm just wondering, and again, more rhetorical, but what effort is put into causation or prevention so that there isn't as much need for the other three? And those are budget items that were obviously increasing lately. And not only is it a budget concern, but it's also a societal concern. And safety is always our concern, as it is yours. So I know we lead the nation in domestic violence and sexual assault, which is abhorrent, but I'm glad there's some extra effort put into that. We also lead the nation in gun deaths and gun violence, and we're number two in the nation in suicide. So are there any efforts in those areas? And suicide, I realize, is not maybe under your purview as police officers, but in the realm of public safety, I would think that would be a concern, and that isn't something that's easily preventable by, say, putting VPSOs in every village. That's more of a perhaps a behavioral health or health type question, but are there efforts or discussions along those lines as far as the, and again, I think you've almost answered it already, but in the big picture, do we need to look at those things to try to prevent and lower the need for crime intervention, courts, and corrections? And is that something, as a Department of Public Safety, that you guys are thinking about, even though I know you've got your hands full already?
Deputy Commissioner?
Through the chair, Representative Wall, you know, just to echo the previous questions and the commissioner's comments, there is not a full macro view right now, but there is specific to causation. Representative Wolves, you talked about for several years now, even going back to a prior life before being the DC, you know, operating the Criminal Intelligence Center, we look at a lot of different data sets. We look at a lot of different causational factors because we see it. We're dealing with it. We're investigating those crimes. And we partnered with the public health officials to actually share data on a very core level where we hadn't done that in the past, because the thought was, and it was for specifically for suicides, and it was also specifically for when we had, you know, these endemics of drug overdoses specific to opioids, and then moving forward with you know, some of the worst stuff. So yes, we share at a very core level. We understand that we're not the ones who examine causation, but we're the ones who have the data, and we're the ones who have the information. And in the past, there was always sort of a compartmentalization. We don't do that anymore. We make sure that we share what we can immediately when we can with the people who have those authorities and those departments that are built to investigate specific to, you know, causational factor for suicide and overdose deaths.
Representative Wall.
Yeah, I'd say thank you for that answer, and I realize These are big picture issues, and I just hope at some point you guys will contribute your expertise and knowledge, and in this case data, towards a holistic solution, because I think ultimately that's what we need if we want to move the needle on these difficult issues. Thank you.
Commissioner?
If you don't mind, I got one comment. I think, you know, as a state, I think we need to do better in addressing our mental health issues that we have. If you look at what we deal with the Alaska State Troopers, we're dealing with mental health crisis all the time. And it, for some reason over the years, it continues to climb higher and higher. And we're not the only law enforcement agency that deals with that. I mean, it's systemic to this state, and not only our state, but probably a state nationwide. And that's something that I don't know that I have a place to say that, but I don't know that we've really addressed it as a state, and it would certainly help us if we had more places to take people that have mental health crisis instead of to DOC custody.
Thank you for that. Any closing comments? Representative LeBon?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Were you trying to be done at 3 o'clock? Are we okay?
This was not my meeting. So go right ahead.
So, thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm going to follow up a little bit on Representative Josephson's comments about public safety in boroughs and organized parts of the state, et cetera. Some of us represent districts that enjoy the services of a local police department, and that's my case. My district falls entirely within the city limits of Fairbanks, and my public safety agency is known as the Fairbanks Police Department. If the police department asks the city council and the mayor to add one position, there's the debate, the budget adjustment, and then if that's approved, I look at my tax statement the next spring and I'm paying for that additional position. So what we have is a disconnect in this state, and it's nobody's fault. It's certainly not the troopers' fault. But if you need 100 additional troopers, we need to fund it. This committee and the legislature needs to fund those positions. Now, today, maybe we have revenue and we're all feeling pretty good about it, but a year ago, we would not have felt good about that. I don't know what we will feel like 6 months or even a year from now. The additional positions that you're seeking to add, and you're not asking for funding, Representative Merrick's question about what would that cost be, I'd feel better about that if I knew what that was. We built the money or the funding for those positions in the budget now. Some of us may not be here next January when there's a supplemental budget request to fund these positions, and maybe my successor's not happy with me that we approve at least in theory go ahead and fill these positions, and we'll worry about the money later. That's not how it works in the private sector. That's not how it works in organized cities with public safety. So I'm a little surprised that we're looking at it that way. So I would encourage you to give us the number, and I would encourage us, if we're comfortable with that increase, that we build it into the budget now. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative LeBon. Any?
To the chair, I'm certainly not going to argue that, because I know the strategy that we're dealing with right now is fairly risky.
Thank you. I see no further questions from the committee. Any closing comments?
I know you've heard a lot of me today. I do want to thank you for this robust conversation. I think as a, you know, we are the premier law enforcement agency in this state, it's important that you know what we're doing, where we're going as a department. And, you know, and this is good. I mean, we need to do this more often, really, when you think about it, because we are asking a big ask. Like I say, I have full confidence if we get the funding available, our victim advocate, our victim, our witness victim coordinators, or they're called paralegals, our tribal liaisons, and the support staff for our troopers, I know will make a difference in the next year once we get this all put together. And as you know, it won't happen overnight like I'd like to. It's a process to get going. And I see, you know, this is one step and a step of stairs as we go as a department. And hopefully I'll be around long enough, and you guys will be around long to see this and see the improvements we're able to make, not only specifically in rural Alaska, but around the state. We're committed to doing that. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. We appreciate you being with us, and Deputy Commissioner and Ms. Howell. Thank you guys so much for your presentation today. This concludes our business. Our next meeting is scheduled for tomorrow, February 18th at 1:30 p.m. We will hear from the Department of Law and the Judiciary. With that, we are adjourned at 3:12 p.m. Thank you.